effectively do you manage up? For those of us who struggle with imposter syndrome or self-doubt, this can be a big challenge. But if you want to get ahead, it's an important muscle to build. This week, I talk with Roberta Matchison, an executive coach and author of the book, Suddenly in Charge, Managing Up, Managing Down, Succeeding All Around. Roberta shares her own experience with learning the hard way about the importance of managing up. We also talk about strategies you can use to manage up in ways that feel more authentic to you. Thank you so much, as always, for listening. Welcome to the Imposter Syndrome Files. My name is Kim Menninger, and as an executive coach and former high-tech leader, my personal mission is to help professionals overcome imposter syndrome so that you can advance your career with confidence. Each week, I interview a new guest who brings a powerful perspective to this conversation, including personal stories, best practices, and new insights. The more we talk about this issue, the more we destigmatize imposter syndrome, recognize that we're not alone, and empower ourselves to access the tools and resources that can help us and those around us. Thank you so much for listening and for sharing with others you think would benefit from this conversation. Welcome, Roberta. It is so wonderful to have you here today. I can't wait to jump into our conversation, and I'd love to start by inviting you to introduce yourself.
Well, thank you, Kim. It's a pleasure to be here. My name is Roberta Matchison, and I am known globally as the Talent Maximizer. And like many of your listeners, my life is somewhat similar in the fact that the lessons that I learned along the way, those are the exact lessons that I talk about. You and I'll be talking about that, and I've written about that in 7 books, and the new one will be out next week, Suddenly in Charge. That's the 3rd edition, and I'm really looking forward to hearing how I can be of help to your listeners today.
Wonderful. Well, thank you. And would you mentioned some of the lessons that you learned. Would you mind sharing a little bit about what were some of the bigger themes that you bumped into in your own journey? Like, what are the kinds of things that led you down the path of, I really need to help other people?
Okay, well, it all started when I was 24 years old. And I went into work one day and I found out that my boss had been fired. And so I did what I thought any other 24-year-old would do. I went to her boss, who was the president, and I asked for her job. And they actually gave it to me. So at 24 years old, I was thrown into the executive suite. I was managing a team of people. Some were old enough to be my parents, others to be my grandparents. And my problem was probably very different than many of your listeners who may have this feeling like, oh, you know, maybe I'm not good enough, or why am I in this job? I thought I was like the bomb. I thought I was like, I deserve this job. I was 24. I knew everything. And what I didn't know, which was what eventually took me out, was I didn't know that I needed to manage up. So I kept my head down and I did my job, all the tactical pieces, and I learned on the job because, you know, I didn't have a lot of experience, and I made the mistake. I didn't build relationships. And then one day I got taken out by a wave I never saw coming.
I'm really glad you said that, because I think a lot of times we assume that confidence is the primary challenge. It's not the issue, right? It was how you navigated the role once you got there. And part of, I think, what makes this so complicated is that we learn certain subjects in school and we're taught certain things about, you know, the areas of focus of our jobs, but we didn't always learn things like, oh, you really need to make sure you're spending time building relationships. We usually learn that the hard way.
I know. And there are very few universities that actually have business classes on managing up. I was very lucky when I was doing my graduate work, I took a course on power and politics. And I mean, it was the best course I ever took. And as we went through the process, we had to kind of dissect our own organization and see where all the politics was going on and how to navigate that. And at the end of that course, I was like, I got to get out of this job. because I was so naive. I had no idea. And I see a lot of that in when I'm coaching people or when I'm doing speeches, especially people who work for nonprofits. They will say to me, well, our organization isn't political. And I'm like, your organization is way more political than others, because when there is a limited amount of resources, that's when the politics really fire up, right? Because for me to get something, because there isn't a lot, something's going to happen to you. So,
yes. And that's how I think about it too. When you bring people with different agendas together who are fighting for limited resources, you are going to get politics, whether you want them or not.
But I know how to handle that now. Back then, I was like, what is this politics thing? Like, I'm just doing my job here, people.
Yeah. Well, and you know, that point is really important, because what I'd love to hear your perspective on is, I think a lot of people, especially high achievers, people were really good at school because they were studious, right? They followed the rules. They knew how to ace the exam, but then they get into the workplace and it feels almost like an injustice to be so focused on the work, to be able to produce such high quality work, and then to watch the people around you, you know, getting opportunities because it seems like they've got connections or they have this political capital, and it feels like they're almost cheating, when in actuality that is the way the system works. And so can you
say, I mean, I have people when I'm coaching, like I'm working right now with a group of female executives that work for a biotech company, and you know, they were just shocked to hear, like, oh, this is going on. This is the reason why this is happening to me. Like, they were shocked at that revelation, or they were like, you know, we really don't like people who brown nose, because that's what people think managing up is, and it is not. But yet, then they will describe for me the behaviors of the most successful people around them, and they're all managing up. And so when I help them reframe this, I'm like, look, this politics is not a dirty word. And this business of managing up, it is not an option. And so when I help them reframe that, and I help my clients reframe that, they're like, yeah, I can do that. Yeah, that aligns with my values, my ethics. I can do it. And I can do it in a way that works for me. Not, I don't have to be like that, you know, jerk that we all deal with who, you know, I'm not even going to tell you what department they work in, but you probably know.
Can you actually define your way of thinking about managing up? Because I do think that it's a term that isn't always defined, or everybody has their own interpretation.
Sure. Yeah. Managing up, the way I define it, is it's managing your boss and your boss's peers so that you can get the resources you need for yourself and for your people.
Yeah. And that is so important, because I think it's so easy to assume that our managers can read our minds, or that they're fully tuned into what we need and what we're working on. And the reality is that they're human too.
They're doing their jobs. They're like overwhelmed, especially today, right? Everybody's slicing and dicing, and jobs aren't being backfilled. And so they're doing two or three jobs. You're doing two or three jobs. They have no idea what you're doing. And if you don't remind them, and you don't tell them, and you don't shamelessly promote, then the person who does and does that well, they're the ones who are going to get the opportunities, not you.
Yeah. And that's where I think a lot of people feel incredibly resentful, because they feel like their counterpart maybe is doing mediocre work, when in actuality, they're using different skills.
Yeah. And, you know, they should be ticked off at themselves. And I'll tell you a story. I was doing a workshop on executive presence for women in IT for a very, very, very well-known tech company, shall we say. And you're probably using their products right now. And in the room was their manager. And these were all women, and their manager was in the room. And this one young woman, she was pushing back really hard on some of the stuff I was saying. And then finally, her boss, who was in the room, said, listen, I want you to all hear me. There isn't a day that doesn't go by when your male counterparts are in my office asking me when they're going to get promoted. I have not seen one of you do that. And so these guys, and I do mean guys, they're in there and they're saying, hey, when am I've been in this job 30 seconds. When am I going to get promoted? And the women are sitting back because they're polite and they know it's not nice to ask. And, you know, they'll be acknowledged when the right time comes and their work will, you know, demonstrate that they're the right choice. And, you know, they're best kept secrets. And so the result is they don't get promoted. And then they get pissed off. They're pissed off at the system, but it's not the system that's the problem. It's the fact that they're not taking action.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that's a great example of when you talk about politics, if you've got a squeaky wheel, right? Men are much better at this. And a lot of that is their social conditioning. But if they are in the office of their manager saying, hey, when am I eligible for that next promotion? And I often say this to women too, if you're just smiling and pleasantly doing the work and following through, like they have no reason to think that you're, you know, if they have to make a choice, which one is a flight risk?
Well, you're home baking cookies for everyone, you know, because you want to please them, right? And they're out, you know, on the golf course with like the heavy hitters. So you kind of have to balance, like, you know, how that might work for you. But you're absolutely right. And, you know, it's really a shame because we know that women oftentimes, like, they should be the ones promoted. And it's really interesting. I think there was a study done by McKinsey, and I don't remember the percentages, but it was significantly more men. They will go for a promotion when they're like, you know, 30 or 40% of what the qualifications are. And women, no, they're going to wait until they have all the qualifications. If the posting says 3 years of experience and they have 2 years and 9 months, they will wait because they don't have three, while their male counterparts will be like, I've been in this job 30 days. I'm qualified. I'm going to go for that promotion. So, I mean, look, I would just encourage your listeners, you know, don't wait. If you think you're qualified and you're ready, go for it. And these are just, you know, desirable qualifications. No one is going to fit into every single box that is on that list. Trust me.
Yeah. And I think that's a really important reminder too. I think we sometimes take these job descriptions at face value, but a lot of times they are just a collection of desirable traits. Nobody's expecting that they're going to get somebody.
No.
100%. So you mentioned something earlier that I think is important to pick up on, which is being able to do it in alignment with your own values. Because I think that to your point, a lot of times we think about this concept of managing up and we look around and some of the ways we're seeing it happen feel a little bit icky. Like it's like, oh, I don't want to do that. How do we think about doing this in a way that doesn't make us feel dirty or sleazy?
Well, I honestly, you know, I think, you know, getting a coach, having somebody who can give you some guidance, who can help you practice so that your language comes out naturally and so that you can ask for what you need in a way that will help you actually get it. And, you know, so for example, I was just coaching an executive in a pharmaceutical company and, you know, she needed more headcount and her company was like, there will be no more headcount. And we went over like how to use influence, how to translate the conversation so that you're putting it in your boss's best interest. And I followed up with her the next day and I'm like, well, how did that conversation go? And she said, I got the people. And I was like, applause, applause, applause. She asked for the people that she needed, the resources in a way that demonstrated that it would be in her boss's best interest. And he gave it to her.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if that would have happened if we hadn't like role played and I hadn't like teed her up. And I'm like, hey, this is exactly what you need to do if you want to get these people. And that's what happened.
And I think you're absolutely right. For many people, this is a big mindset shift. It's not something that they have practiced before and it's not going to be comfortable. You don't want the first time you say it to be in the meeting where
right
matters.
Where Because then you hold yourself back and go, oh my God, did I just say that? Like, and then you start, you know, we women were famous for, oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I didn't mean that. That's not really what I meant. Like, no, it is.
That's right. Well, you also said something important, which is how do you frame it as something that is good for the manager too? Because I think a lot of times, and this is often a function of just how we've been taught as young girls to be very obedient and polite and not to overstep, that if we're asking our boss for resources, that it feels like a personal favor, right? That it's like, oh, I'm making this inappropriate request, as opposed to recognizing that you're asking for resources so you can maximize your contribution to this organization, right? You're not asking your boss to come and help you move on the weekend. You're asking your boss to give you the tools so you can effectively do your job on behalf of the company.
Okay, but we have to take that one step further. And by getting those resources, you will be able to take things off his or her plate, which will allow them to work on more visible projects or actually get home in time once a week to have dinner with their, you know, oldest child who'll be leaving for college in the fall.
Yes, yes.
So that's the secret. You got to tie that back to, well, why would this be good for me? Like, why as a boss would I want to say yes to this?
Yes. And I think we get so in our own heads and we're so worried about overstepping that we're not thinking about this as a mutually beneficial conversation, right? That, you know, I think about this a lot too when it comes to promotions is, yeah, there's obviously an awkwardness or a discomfort that comes with saying, I want to get promoted. But on the other hand, we live in a time where people are leaving their jobs left and right. A lot of people are, you know, quote unquote, quiet quitting or disengaging. And you think about saying to your manager, I want to invest more of my career here and I want to do even more at this company than I'm doing today. Right. Yes, there's an ask of maybe it's more money, a higher title, and there's a lot of behind the scenes things that need to happen in order to make that, you know, work. But really what you're saying is I believe in this company and I want to be an even bigger part of it. And I think there's a really fundamentally positive message to that.
Exactly. And, you know, you can't sit there when somebody else gets promoted and they get the job you want, but you never even bother to ask for it. You can't be like angry, like, well, how come they got it? You could be angry at yourself, like, well, why didn't I ask for it? But you can't be, you know, disappointed or angry at them because it's not about them. It's really about you.
Yes, exactly. You know, and as cliche as it sounds, right? You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Very true. And as I tell my clients, if you don't manage up, you're not going to have to worry about managing down.
That's a great
you won't be in a management role and you won't even have a job. Trust me, I know.
Yes. Yeah. I know it's harsh, but true. And I wonder too, because you talked about shameless promotion and I'm curious what you think about, you know, we're talking a lot about managing up in terms of ensuring that you get what you need to do your role. What does promotion look like, especially for women who feel very uncomfortable with what they perceive to be bragging? And there's this feeling of we should be humble. How do you promote?
Yeah, well, we have to stop that. Okay. I mean, you have to say, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't share this. So, for example, suppose your organization is looking to open up a new market. They just, you know, your boss just announced, you're in sales and your boss announced, hey, we're going to go into Latin America. All right. So your last name is, let's say, Cohen, probably not a Latin name. All right. And your boss has no idea that you are fluent in Spanish. All right. And oh, you're thinking, oh, yeah, they're going to look through the applicant tracking system that our company has or the personnel files, and they'll know like they have a Spanish speaker here. No, they're not. And so you might say, you know, wow, after the meeting, you know, wow, Joe, that's really interesting. I'm not sure if you realize, but I'm actually fluent in Spanish. And Joe will be like, no, I didn't. And I'd love an opportunity to open up that market, like, and manage it. Wow. Well, you know, I grew up in a household where, you know, we were all bilingual. I did not know that. Yeah. So let's get a date on the calendar because I'd like to interview for this job. And you just have to keep, you know, pushing. But I think it's important that you let them know because they don't know.
That's right. And I often think about when I think about self-promotion, there's ego-driven self-promotion and there's service-driven self-promotion, right? So the obnoxious behavior that we tend to associate with self-promotion is that ego-driven, look at how wonderful I am kind of behavior that most of us, you know, think we don't want to be that person. But what you're describing is what I consider more service-oriented self-promotion, because you win, but the company wins too. Like, how wonderful to have someone in that role who speaks the language, who already, right, you know, already has an understanding of the culture. Like, that's a much better resource than having to go out and now we have to find somebody. We've got to get them up to speed. So if you're sharing because you think your skill set actually aligns with a need of the organization, or you're sharing because you want to inform somebody about something that they can now take advantage of, because you're not working in a vacuum. Everybody's work is...
But it's also important to be a person of interest. So I remember leading a workshop on this very topic. And, you know, I told everybody, like, what the exercise was, they had to think of something that most people don't know about them. And we went around the room and I told them that the last person that goes is going to be the hardest, because we had some amazing people who had come to our country and never didn't speak a word of English, people who's, you know, you just name it. And this one woman stands up and she says, well, the thing that most people don't know about me is that I have an Olympic medal. And the room went silent, right? And I looked at her, she goes, well, actually I have two. And I said to her, let me just tell you this. If I had two Olympic medals, I'd be standing up here with my medals on my chest, leading this workshop. So you all knew I was an Olympian. Like, I'd never met an Olympian. Maybe I have, and they just haven't told me. And so she was in pharmaceutical sales. And, like, you know, obviously when you're an Olympian or an athlete at that level, I mean, the commitment and you name it, you know, all the traits that you must possess. And I was like, you have to really make sure people know this.
Yes. Oh my gosh. You're absolutely right. I like the way you described it as being a person of interest, because that generates curiosity and it becomes the basis for more relationship building, which is something I wanted to bring into the conversation too.
I want to interject here just for a moment, because you and I, before we started, I was talking to you about pickleball, and I play a lot. And I was on the court the other day with a woman who works for one of the major four consulting firms now that are out there. And she said she was completely taken off guard when she went out to dinner with some of the senior executives. And, you know, she's a director, and they were having dinner. And rather than talking about golf, they were talking about pickleball. And this one guy who didn't play and he played golf, he like felt completely left out, and they kept talking to her and chatting. And like, she was building these relationships with these people because they found her to be interesting, and they had no idea that, you know, she played and they could have these discussions. So I don't want the people today on your listening to think, well, I don't golf. I don't want to golf. Well, guess what? I don't want to golf either. You know, but there are other things that you may be doing. You may be an equestrian. You may be learning guitar on your own. I mean, you may be a drummer. I don't know. But I'm sure you're doing something that makes you more interesting and people don't know about it.
Yeah, that's a good point too. And I think that, unfortunately, a lot of the interests that make us interesting aren't as visible. You know, if you play golf and you run into people, you know, it's easier to know when other people are golfers, but your interest in, you know, an instrument or something that might not come up in conversation might be a missed opportunity. That's another example of where it makes sense to proactively share that, because you never.
Exactly.
And so you're talking about the relationship building piece, which I think is so important too, because when you talked about managing up, you talked about your boss and your boss's peers. And I think there's a lot of hesitation often about, well, I don't want to bother people, or my boss needs to be the gatekeeper, right? I don't want to look like I'm going around my boss, or everyone's so busy that I, you know, there's all kinds of reasons why we think that we should just stay in our lane and not actually connect with other people. What are your thoughts on that?
I think, again, a huge opportunity lost. You don't have to beehive around your boss. You could just say, hey, at the next meeting, do you think it's possible for me to present our findings? Since I was the lead person on this report, I would love to be in the room because, you know, there may be questions, quite frankly, that you may not be able to answer. And I wouldn't want that to happen. I'll be right there and I'll be able to answer those questions. So maybe I could do, you know, 3-minute summary and then, you know, listen and then get out when you guys are talking about stuff that I'm not supposed to hear.
Yeah, I think that's a really great strategy because once again, your boss wins too, because they don't have to be worrying about being in an uncomfortable situation with questions they can't answer.
And the other thing is when they see your boss and he or she has surrounded themselves with like these like fabulous people, they look good. Mm-hmm. It's like, wow, they must be a really great manager. Like, look how she was great. She just went right in, got it done. Everything was perfect. Like, wow. So when the light shines on, you know, you, they shine brightly.
Yes, I think that's a really good point too. And I think that there are certainly managers that are insecure and feel threatened when their team members try to maybe build a relationship with their boss or somebody more senior. But I also think there's a lot of value to making sure that you are keeping your boss in the loop on what it is that you're trying to do. If it seems like, you know, if you're having a surprise meeting with your boss's boss, they didn't know what was happening. And that's yes. Make anybody a little bit paranoid or suspicious. But if you tell your boss, yeah, I'd really like to build a stronger relationship with your manager or with some of your peers, and here's why, and here's how everyone wins, I think that eases some of the fear that your threatened boss might otherwise have.
Yeah. Or you never know, like, you know, maybe your boss has no idea that your spouse is friends with his or her boss's spouse and you have these people over for dinner. And then the guy says, or the woman says, oh yeah, I was at Peggy's house, you know, last week and we were talking, and your boss is like, why would you be? So yeah, there's nothing wrong with, you know, keeping people in the loop and being, you know, authentic and not trying to hide things, because there's nothing to hide. When you look like you're hiding something, they get suspicious. So
that's exactly right. And I also think it's important, especially when we talk about getting promoted, oftentimes we might be really good at building a relationship with our own manager, but we forget that there are other people in the room when those decisions are made.
Absolutely.
And you have your boss's peers have to know who you are and have to understand your value in order to agree with the decision that you're the best person to step into that next role.
Yeah, I've seen people not get promotions because somebody who was, you know, part of that team is like, nah, they're not that one. Anybody but. So yeah.
Yeah. So there, I mean, I think what the sort of theme is of what you're saying is when you're not doing this, it's a missed opportunity, no matter how high quality your work is, right? And I think for a lot of people, that is the wish. It's like, oh gosh, if only I could just do my job, right? If I could just...
Well, if you want to just do your job, like go into research or... You know, you can't even just do that if you have your own business. I'd love to tell you as a solopreneur that, oh, I don't really have to do anything. Well, I don't have to do anything and don't want to do, that's for sure. But I do have to do things. And I have to talk to people who I may not necessarily be a huge fan of, but I do it. So these are good skills, especially for those listeners who are, you know, coming into their own and are starting to move up in the organization. I really go into a lot of detail in the third edition of Suddenly in Charge. Half the book's on managing up and the other half is on managing down. And I tell people, if they're not managers, just read the first half. You will get your money's worth because it is chock full of advice and conversations and examples like you and I are having.
Yeah, I think that's a really important resource because this often feels like a secret formula that other people have that we don't.
Well, I wrote this book because this is the book I wished that I had when I was 24. And I think for the first time, because this is the third edition, so the first book was, I think, in 2010. I think this is the first time my children, who are now young adults, will actually read it.
What a great legacy, right? That's so important, that wisdom.
My daughter will not listen to the audio because she's like, you have that voice, Mom. Like, it doesn't sound like you.
Leave it to your kids.
Right. I'm like, look, you don't have to listen to the audio. Just read the book.
Well, you have shared so much great wisdom with us today, Roberta. I think this is a resource that we can all benefit from, no matter where we are in our careers. Where can people find you if they want to learn more about you, access the book, where, you know, just get more of you?
They can get a lot of me by emailing me at Roberta@Matuson, M-A-T-U-S-O-N, consulting.com. They can go to my website, Matuson Consulting.com. They can send me an invitation to connect on LinkedIn. If you want to do that, that's great. Just please mention that you heard this podcast with Kim, because I get a ton of requests. And if you're just popping in there, I'm like, sorry.
Yeah, thank you, Roberta. And I'll make sure all those links are in the show notes as well for anybody who's interested. Thank you so much for being here today. This has been such a great conversation.
It's my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks so much for listening to the Imposter Syndrome Files. If you would like to continue this conversation in a safe and trusted space, I would love for you to join my virtual discussion group every Thursday at 12 p.m. Eastern. For the past several years, the group has been limited to women, but it is now open, regardless of gender, to anyone who is interested in exploring and troubleshooting common workplace challenges, building better awareness of ourselves and others, and becoming more inclusive allies at work. Check out the show notes for more info on how to find us, and please join us next week for another episode of the Imposter Syndrome Files.